It's Friday, March 31st, 2017, and welcome to episode 199. We're one away from 200.
Oh, I wanted to be in the 200th.
I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
And welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. So I always have to pause whenever I do these introductions and think about what episode we're on. So with us today is Brian Poulter.
I am he.
And Brian's here today. I've invited him in. He is kind of our photojournalist expert on the, and there's a lot of overlap between teaching and journalism for sure. So I've invited him in today, and we're going to talk a little bit about a new genre, I guess, of photography.
Yeah, a reinvented genre, infrared photography, but it's so much easier to do now because of the access of digital technologies.
So we're going to stretch a little bit and go out there and find out some new things, something that I know very little bit about. So we'll rely on Brian to tell us more about that. And then we'll have our technology picks of the week and just a little bit of preview. Mine's going to involve OneNote once again.
Mine surprisingly has to do with photography, but what you can do on your phone with free software.
Okay, so sit back, relax, and here we go. Up first today, we have Brian Poulter back with us this time, and we're going to be talking about some new camera technology that he's experimenting with. And I always like to kind of go out there and see what's new, and since Brian's our photography expert, we've invited him in, and we're going to be talking about infrared.
Infrared, digital photography.
Okay, so let's just start with the very basics. What is infrared photography?
Okay, so infrared photography has been around since film, essentially. And infrared is a spectrum of light that you do not perceive. But if you've ever seen photographs, and the infrared photographs, you may not know they were infrared, but they're very surreal. Often green comes out as white, so you know you have a big green forest, it looks like it's all snow, and depending on how far you go or the spectrum you choose to segregate into your film or into your sensor, you get these rather cool looking photographs that are mm-hmm. just really pretty. And they're also characteristic if you see really dark skies, but these big, puffy, white clouds, and that's sort of the style I like. It's not so much the surreal as just the really contrasty, lack of a better word, slightly impressionistic photographs. So that's been around for a long time, and it used to be you would shoot traditional film, and then you'd put this very heavy red filter that would cut out a lot of your light, because remember, you're throwing out the visible spectrum. You're only working with infrared. What's new is there are a number of companies that will take your digital camera, or you can sometimes trade yours in, and they'll convert them so they shoot infrared. And the way they do this is, first of all, there's a filter in front of the sensor that stopped infrared from getting to that sensor because we didn't want to deal with it. They take that off. And then depending on the style of infrared photography you want, they will put a different filter on that will allow that spectrum of infrared light to get mm-hmm. there. The company I use is Kolar, KOLAR.com, but there's a bunch of different people that will do this conversion. So I took one of my now retired Fujifilm digital cameras, had them do the conversion for me, and because my camera is what's called a mirrorless camera, which is like an SLR, but it's not. The mirror doesn't flop up when you take a picture. I'm looking through the camera. It appears in my camera like I'm shooting a black and white photograph, and then when I get out, I can do a bunch of different processing to accent.
Yeah. We'll throw some links up for some example pictures, but whenever you first introduced me to it, I kind of thought of it kind of looks like a negative, because you talk about the reverse, you know, and kind of a miniature science lesson here. You talk about wavelengths of light, you know, what's absorbed and what's reflected type things. But I kind of think of it as like a negative, but it's not that, because it's not just black and white. There's additional colors, so it's like really saturated sometimes.
Yeah, well, the one I'm going to show you actually are all black and white, but imagine if you have this farmhouse and this green field and the clouds and all that. The farmhouse will look normal in black and white, but the green field, because we are not using reflected light but the infrared light that comes off of it, it'll actually be very snowy because it's such an efficient reflector of red light that it comes up very bright white.
Mm-hmm.
The sky itself is cold. It's not getting infrared, so it's dark black, but your mm-hmm. clouds, which have water vapor in them, which means they effectively reflect all kinds of light, including infrared, are very white and puffy. So you get these very stark, contrasty skies. But, you know, you can have horses in a field, and the horses look normal, relatively normal, but the field will be really white, and they just look, for lack of a better word, pretty.
Kind of, you mentioned before, it was kind of like a niche in photography for some HDRs, another one out there. It took a while for me to acquire the HDR whenever that first came out. I don't know. I'm probably behind the times, but, you know, a few years ago, HDR kind of like hit the scene, and I experimented with it, and it looks really cool with some of the different things, high dynamic range type things that you can do with it. Infrared, I don't know. I suspect that there's like probably some, you know, business uses, practical uses out there for infrared, maybe like with crop management or something like that.
Crop management, and obviously I think a lot of people are familiar with having their house maybe shot in infrared for heat. That's a slightly different part of the spectrum, so that's not the same thing. You don't want to use infrared still photography usually to do heat analysis. It's just the wrong part of the spectrum. I know that some agricultural uses are photographing a field, and because different crops reflect light at different rates, you can tell how many weeds are in there, but that's very specific, and including illegal growing of marijuana or other plants. I think they've used it for that, but that's, again, a different set of wavelengths and different equipment than what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
But we can, I have one test shot I shot we can throw up, but at the end of the summer or toward the middle, I can probably show, I'll have more stuff that you guys can look at and see what I'm talking about.
Okay, so as we transition, you know, this time of year, I'm always starting to think a little bit about summer and some new projects and things. That's one reason we want to talk about this, because there's always something new to experiment. There's also, I'm starting another project. I'm starting a, I'm going to call this little segment, you know, keeping it real, but how do we bring in real life experiences into the classroom? And, you know, photography's obviously one. And I'm starting a notebook called The Learning Garden. So I'm going to kind of document as I plant my spring garden, to just kind of take some pictures and things along and kind of develop some, you know, just some ideas for curriculum. One of the nice things, you know, about using a OneNote notebook and developing your own curriculum, you can tailor it around your interest and your students' interest. And as I said, they're going to be much more involved and much more motivated whenever it's something, you know, local and, as I said, real to them. There was a big movement back at the turn of this century for gardens in schools. University of Chicago, John Dewey, all the schools around here had gardens, and they just incorporated it into the curriculum. So there's always something new to do that. And, you know, the photography, it's just so easy just to be able to go out there with your mobile phone now and be able just to snap a shot, put it into the OneNote notebook, and then you see the progress over time.
And you can do it live from the field. You don't even have to literally come in.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's the huge thing, as I said, keeping it real. All of this field work, no matter what your subject area, you know, brings a whole new definition when you go on a field trip or something for documenting that experience and things. So it's just so easy to do. The other interest I know that you have, and we talked a little bit about this that we might share in a future episode, biking. You know, you're going to be doing some biking and things, and some things with GPS systems.
Right. So there are a number of different little bike computers you can get, and you can also get them for hiking and whatnot. But one of the things we talked about is, there's a bike race I'm doing in this area. It's a 50-mile, very hilly thing, and I'm not going to win. I just hope to survive, honestly. But my Garmin GPS unit will keep track, and if we wanted to, we could even stream it live. But, I mean, we wouldn't want to do that, but it would be a possibility. Keeps track of, obviously, where I am, the elevation. You know, it breadcrumbs the track that I'm on. It gives you my cadence, how much I'm pedaling. My heart rate, if I didn't say that. And it produces this whole set of data that's savable, especially the GPS tracks. And we had talked about doing using that data set that will collect, showing people how what they could do with that data set, whether or not it's math, health, geography. You know, obviously, geography involves mapping. I can export this data set of the course I took, and you can just open up Google Maps, as long as you have an account, like a Gmail account, and you go under My Maps, and you can import it, and you can exactly look at this data set. And then on that map, once it appears, there's a whole set of tools where you can measure how long a particular leg was. So then you could go look at the data set and say, what was his average heart rate, or what was the elevation climb, or what was the elevation loss. You can calculate watts of power, Mm-hmm. So there's all this math and geography that comes about, and then I'm sure some of your listeners have seen where people have gone out and done GPS drawings. They go out, they map out a course, mm-hmm. they draw, and they can draw a picture of a guy smiling over their city, you know, just by the city, the roads and the route mm-hmm. they select.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could take this GPS and go back to what you were talking about in terms of your gardening. What are the parameters? Mm-hmm. What's the distance? What are your rows? There's just so many different mm-hmm. things. And I'm sure a lot of school children have seen their parents use GPS, and mm-hmm. you can do it with a very basic GPS, and then I'm not even touching on geocaching.
Right. There's just all kinds, you know, and since we're in Illinois, people don't realize how sophisticated farming's, you know, become. We have yield monitors on combines now that you can go through, and it will tell you what section of your field is producing more, what's producing less. Then you can do micronutrient analysis and, you know, next year change your fertilizer mix up. It's become very, very technical with all the capability that you can do.
GPS is really a big thing. And what's really interesting about some of these too is, you know, most people know this, my Garmin uses the US GPS and the Russian GPS to counter to keep itself accurate. It's actually it's using two different GPS systems, and it's also how it calculates altitude loss and gain. So mm-hmm. you really do get a good mm-hmm. Map of the geography, the topography.
Technology's obviously, you know, impacting everything these days, and I don't think we often pause and mix the real world in with the classroom. And as I said, I always try tapping into the student interest or the local, you know, geographic interest. The other thing with GPS, and it's a whole nother discussion, but with self-driving cars and self-driving tractors, you know, self-driving tractors have been around for a long time, you know, all of these ethical concerns and all of that. So you can wrap that around, you know, whatever your subject area out there. So it's always interesting just being creative, being a creative teacher out there, you know, keeping yourself up to date. That's why we kind of bring in some of these different technologies and just, you know, we want you to go out there and create, you know, stimulating lessons for your students that they're going to be interested in. So we'll leave it there, and then we'll give you an update probably the next time. And this summer, I think we've got some really cool projects to share out. Technology pick of the week this week is going to be a bit futuristic, and I hope this prediction comes true.
Uh-oh.
Microsoft OneNote has announced that they're going to be supporting digital inking in the browser version of OneNote Online. And this is something that a lot of us OneNote fans have been asking for a long time. And one of the reasons I think, you know, it's so important or will be an added benefit for teachers is you only need to have a browser to access some digital inking, so you'll be able to draw. And that may seem like a very simple request, but, you know, we're all about annotating and pointing out different things. So those photographs that we were just talking about, you know, put it into OneNote notebook, mm-hmm. circle it, but put an arrow there. It's drawing the student's attention to a subject area that, you know, either they never thought about before or just trying to make it a little bit more clear. And that's just going to open up a whole other set of possibilities, especially like in our shared computer labs. And that's why it's such an issue. Because whenever a student comes in and logs into our ITC lab, for instance, they're not logging in with their account, so they don't have the full-blown desktop version of OneNote Online. They're accessing the browser version. So hopefully this is going to come true here in the month of April. They've said that it's rolling out and should be happening soon. So I'm going to make that my tech pick. And if you've not explored digital inking and, you know, in your note taking and things, blending the physical paper with digital paper, it allows you to do, you know, just so much more than just a plain paper-based system. So that's my tech pick.
So my tech pick of the week is actually going back to the future, something I've recommended before, which is a free piece of software for phones called Snapseed. And it is essentially the free Photoshop for the phone, and it's available for all platforms. And the reason I'm reminding people of it is in the last 6 months, they've just introduced update after update after update. You can now shoot in RAW, which is an unprocessed version. It'll kick out TIFFs or RAWs or JPEGs. So it's just a really handy piece of software, and since it's free, everybody can have it, and you really should start playing with it because it's an amazing piece of software, especially with the new Androids that were just announced and the new iPhones we expect
to
come out.
That could have been my tech pick, too. Yeah, Samsung just announced the S8 a couple of days ago, which I have the S7 phone out there, and I'm trying to think what the newest features. Did you see the announcement?
Yes, I did. They were all excited about the all-glass iris eye recognition as login, but you can also use fingerprint if you prefer. Of course, the processor is faster, and they're emphasizing their battery safety and all that, and it's now better than industry norms. Those are the things I remember.
Yeah, the other thing, my tech picker last month was the Samsung Gear 360 camera. They did announce the Gear 360 Pro camera. So, you know, you and I rely on Brian because he's our photography expert, but these are uncharted waters. Now we have the capability of 360-degree either still photographs or moving video photographs out there. And in the education space, I'm interested in it for, like, doing some observations or something out there. You know, typically we just have, you know, one frame of reference, but with the 360 camera, you literally can move it around. So the Gear 360 Pro camera is out, and I haven't seen pricing yet or availability, but it'll be out soon.
One thing I just want to throw out, too, here. It's important that you try some of these so you know that these resources are available. I find that if I don't attempt to teach things differently occasionally, I get bored with it. And if I'm bored, I know who else is bored in that classroom. And it keeps stuff that I've been doing for a long time really fresh and interesting. So it's an act of self-preservation and also modeling effective teaching strategies for me to try to find something that works better. But it really does keep you motivated, and you have more fun teaching. Teaching is fun, but you have more fun because you're like, oh, I've never tried this before. And sometimes it doesn't work out, and you go, not doing that again. And then sometimes you have these happy accidents where a student will do something with a piece of technology you didn't anticipate, and you're like, okay, I'm stealing that.
Yeah, and that's how progress happens. So, right. Yeah. Okay, so always something new. And as I said, as we go into the summer, we'll certainly be experimenting. And, you know, if you have some things out there that are working that you've never tried before, just let us know. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That wraps it up for episode 199 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on our Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Brian Poulter.
Keep on learning.